Koftalid Ir, 9th of May, Dain Johannesson David Hull, taught arising from professional negligence.
Before we start, let's make it quite clear that taught is not in this context a cake, it's in fact. The legal term for damages, or what we would call in Hebrew, nezek or nezikin. In legal terms, it's referred to as tort. So what are we talking about here? We're going to talk about a case, a hypothetical case, there are such cases which have come to the Beis Din, of somebody, professional, such as a lawyer, a solicitor, accountant, who gave professional advice, and it turned out that he'd made a mistake. And through the negligence of this professional, the client made a financial loss. Can we make the professional liable to pay for the losses to the client? So of course it's a very, very general question, and we're going to discuss all the various scenarios and possibilities. We're going to concentrate on one particular hypothetical case. A person who wanted to buy a property, and let's say for argument's sake he wanted to develop it, into flats in order to rent out or to sell. He had plans to develop it into 20 flats. The lawyer, the solicitor who he employed to arrange the various legalities of it, made a mistake, didn't notice that the local zoning laws did not allow for such an expansion, and the maximum that would be possible is to get the building converted into 10 flats rather than 20, which is obviously going to bring in less profit than it would have done had he been able to develop it and bring in 20 flats. And in the particular case that we're discussing, a couple of years went past before the project actually got moving. By the time the project started running, the zoning laws had changed, and then in fact, could actually develop it to get 20 flats. But at the time that he originally purchased the property on the professional advice of the solicitor, a mistake was made, and at the time it was worth a lot less than he had hoped, or the potentials was worth less. So has he got a claim in Beis Din for the losses that he has? So let's talk about general klalim of nezek in this respect before we come on to professional liability. There's a concept in halacha of groma. Groma means indirect damage. Groma benizokim potter, it's a kavara or a basra. The general rule is that if you damage someone directly, then you have to pay. If you damage someone indirectly, you don't actually take his object and you break it, but you cause damage to come about, then you don't have to pay. That's the rule in halacha. There is a chiyuv, lotzei sedei shamayim, the one we're going to various different scenarios there, but there is a moral or ethical obligation, if you like, lotzei sedei shamayim, to pay if you've caused the damage, and that's usually in a case where you deliberately did it or you were negligent in doing it rather than when you were completely unaware of what you were doing. There's a chiyuv, lotzei sedei shamayim, but you don't have to pay, it's not actionable in Beis Din, and Beis Din cannot make you chayv in such a chatimsa. And even further removed idea when it comes to this is the concept of mevatel kisoi shel chaveru. Someone who doesn't actually cause financial loss to anybody, but he prevents the other person from making a financial gain. That is a loss of profit. That's not quite the same as actually losing. If someone has some money or an asset and you damage it so it's now worth less, that's called nezek. And if it's direct damage, you're chayv, and if it's indirect, you're potter. Someone who, you didn't actually damage his asset, you didn't make it worth less, but he had the potential to make more money, and you stopped him from making a profit, that is an even further removed stage of nezek, and that's also potter. And therefore, Sochus HaPoilim is actually a question about, there the Gemara actually is a Sochus HaOmnim, the beginning of Sochus HaOmnim, where you hire a worker and then you sack him on the same day, so you've stopped him from making a loss of profit. You made it cause him from making lots of profit, you stopped him from earning money that day, and in that case you actually do have to pay. Because there are certain hechatimsas where if you cause someone to lose profit, you also do have to pay. We're not going to go into all the rules of that, but there are certain echotimsas, certainly in the case of Skiros Poilim, that is the echotimsa. But normally if you prevent someone from making money, then you don't have to pay. However, there is a concept of Bori Hezekah, which means to say, if the damage, or the, in this case, the loss of profit was inevitable. In other words, there was definitely going to be a profit, if not for the actions of the person who caused the damage. Then there are some poskim hold that you do have to pay, even in the case of a Vatal Kisa, even in the case of just preventing someone from making a profit. This is based on the Yerushalmi. Yerushalmi says, it's based on a Mishnah in Bamatzia in the 9th Perek, that someone who accepts upon himself to work on a field is Makabal Zodeh. In those days, the way, one of the ways that people used to farm was to take on tenant farmers. It would be a Balabayath would own the field, and rather than rent it out, he'd take on somebody who would be Makabal upon himself, a type of rent. The person would take upon himself the field, he would work on the field, and he would split the profits in a certain way with the owner of the field, the Metzel, the Shlish, or Revia, or he would provide in some circumstances a fixed amount of grain, whether the field made a lot of profit or a little bit of profit, and that was the arrangement that was set up between them. The Mishnah says, if you're Makabal Asada, if you take upon yourself such a field, and you don't do anything, you sit there the whole year and don't make any effort to plant, to sow, or to water, or to tend to the, and nothing grows. So you have to pay for all of the profit that could have been made from the field. So the Yerushalmi says, that applies to a field, but it doesn't apply to a purse. A mavatal kiso, literally a person's purse or person's wallet or person's money. That is to say, if you take a person's field and you don't work on it and you prevent him from making a profit, then you do have to pay for any losses of profit that he made. However, if you hold back his assets, his money, his cash, and prevent him from dealing business with his money, then you don't have to pay for any potential profit that he could have made. What's the difference between the two? The Yerushalmi doesn't say. There are a number of poskim who say that the difference is that in the field it's certain, or certainly almost certain, that had you tended to the field, the crops would have grown. Particularly if you look at the fields around this particular field and you see that all of them have grown and produced produce this year, there's no reason to assume that this one wouldn't have done had you worked on it. And therefore, Bori Hezekah, it's clear that they've caused damage, even if it's only potential loss of profit. And therefore, you have to pay. Whereas, when it comes to cash, you hold back someone's money and prevent him from investing and making money, that's much less certain that had he invested, he would have actually made any money. Very difficult to know or to prove that he would actually have made any money. So in that case, if you stop him from making money by holding on to his money, you don't have to pay for potential loss of profit, or loss of potential profit. The Shach brings this halacha down to Simurei Tzadik Beis. The case there is of someone who gave somebody else money to look after, and then when he came back, he asked for his money back, and the person didn't give it to him, held on to him for a certain amount of time. As a result of which, he couldn't invest his money, and he could have made profit had he had his money back, which he lost as a result of the fact that the person he'd given the money to look after didn't give it back to him until later. So the Shach says you have no claim for loss of profit, sir, because that's mavato kisa shel chaveru, that is holding someone back, preventing someone from making a profit. And again, according to some poskim, that's only because it's not certain that he would have made the profit. Had it been certain that he would have made the profit, which is very difficult to prove when it comes to cash, and then there are poskim, there's a Rav Yoh who says like that, there's a Masses Binyamin who says like that, and in fact the Pnei Moshe and the Rishalmi explains that is the Pshat and the Rishalmi as well. Most poskim I ever hold not like that, and hold that even if it's it can be proven that he would definitely have made a profit, if you simply call someone from not making a profit, in most circumstances, you don't have to pay, even if it's Bori Hezekah.
Why?
Because it's only a grommet. It's only, first of all, it's only a grommet. It's only causing someone. You didn't actually damage his asset. And second of all, there's no damage at all, if you think about it. It's a loss of potential profit, but no actual damage. And there's no such halacha, according to these poskim, even if the profit would have been certain, there's no actual chiyuv in halacha to pay for such a thing.
But holding back the money is a physical thing, but it does. It's not a grommet.
Yeah, but it doesn't damage the asset. The money's worth the same. It doesn't damage the asset at all. It stops him from making more money. That is, the fact that he doesn't have more money is only a roundabout way. There's nothing that you actually did that took away his extra money. Okay, well, that's what you're holding. The halacha is not like that, and the svar of the dati is not like that. You want to argue the svar, you're welcome. Yeah. So to come back to the Mishnah, the others who explain that the reason why in the case of the field, if you take upon yourself to work on the field and you don't do it, you have to actually pay, is for a different reason. And that is because you accepted upon yourself to pay for any damages. The cases of nezek, of tort in English, are normally cases where it's a one-way relationship. Someone breaks something that belongs to somebody else, there's no two-way involvement between the two parties. One party went and broke the other party's item or object or caused him damage. But in a contractual situation, when you have two people making an agreement between each other, then a person is able to oblige himself to much more liability than he would be liable under the halacha without obliging himself. Yeah. For example, just to take a very simple example that the Mishnah says, Hashem Mechinam, someone who looks after something for free, is liable if the object is looking after gets damaged through his negligence, through pshia, but he's not chayav if it gets stolen, geneva v'aveda, yeah? But if he says at the time he accepts it, I'm prepared to accept liability for geneva v'aveda as well, then he's going to be chayav. Yeah, come on, Bob, it's here. Or the other way around. If he says, as a shoyel, who's got the highest level of liability, that I accept it on condition that I'm not going to be liable if anything happens, and the other party accepts that, then he won't be liable. So, in halacha, there's a default position for liability of when a person acts on his own initiative, but that can always be adjusted if it's talking about a case where there's two or more parties and they make a contract between them. It doesn't have to be written, an oral contract, and a contract in the sense of an agreement between the two parties where they lay out the liabilities between the two of them, then they can adjust the default rules of the halach and dinim omer. So the reason for this is that the Torah believes that a person has absolute control over their own assets. The Torah will tell you what the halacha is if you don't make specific agreement, but if you want to override it, both parties want to override what the default position is, with the haskoma, with the agreement of both parties, you can do that, and you can be machayev yourself, or pat yourself, depending on whatever's agreed. So, there are some poskims, the Machnefrayim comes along and he says, in the Hilchos Shemim Siman Ches, that if you accept upon yourself that you're going to be liable for damages which are groma, which are caused indirectly, then you can be mechayev yourself even for such a eventuality. And he suggests it from a Gemara in Bava Metzia, a Gemara on the base. There the Gemara talks about someone, Rav Chama says, someone who sent somebody to buy some wine. It's a little bit, my colleagues have shown him exactly what the Hechatimsa is, but more or less all agree that the general idea is that you send someone to buy some wine at a cheap place and then to sell it on a more expensive place and make a profit, and he held on to the money and he didn't do it. Then he actually has to pay for the loss of potential profit that the client, the owner, suffered. Right. So the Machnefrayim says, the reason is because he accepted it upon himself. You're only potter for nezek, which is indirect, or mevatel kisei, causing someone to lose profit, if there was no agreement between the two parties. You just went ahead and did it. That's a case of nezek you're potter for, it's gromo. But if you accept upon yourself, I want to be liable, I will agree to be liable, even if I just cause you a loss, and even if I cause you not actual financial loss, but loss of potential profit, if you want to be machayev yourself, you can be. So this is the Machnefrayim. He proves it. It's a modchen. Baba Kama seems to say that, and a number of other poskim seem to say the same thing. It's actually quite a controversial suggestion. A lot of poskim hold that there's no such thing. You cannot be machayev yourself just by talking. The Gemara in a couple of places says, Devorim ba'alma, you need a kinyan. In order to be mechayev yourself, you have to do some type of act of kinyan. Either you pick up a sudah, you pick up something which belongs to somebody else with an intention of obliging yourself, creating liability, or you sign a contract. Some type of action which creates a liability. But just to speak and say, I hereby agree and take upon myself to be liable, is, according to most poskim, not enough to make you chayev something which you're not actually chayev. Yeah, so in the case of the Gemara, which says Masna Shem Mechinam Yerus Kasheil, the Gemara asks, "B'mai b'tvorim?" So the Gemara says, "No, can't be odei. Is it a kinyan? That's the way he was obliging himself to a greater liability, but without doing some ma'aseh kinyan, according to most persons, it doesn't work." And the Machnefrayim does bring down that the Modchel says it, Machnefrayim Shonim, and there are a number of other persons who say the same idea. The Mishnah, the way we would read it, implies that it's only if you did a kinyan, because again, the Mishnah says, a makabel sodeh mechaveris, the Mishnah in Bava Metzia Kuf Daled, we mentioned earlier, you take upon yourself to work on a field, and you don't do anything, but he sits back and lets it go to waste. Now we'd make him pay the loss of any profits that could have been made. Because he's agreed to pay at the outset. But according to the Machlef Chaim, he would say that as long as he's agreed to it, it's lav dafka that he wrote it down. Other person would say, no, he wrote it down by writing and signing it and doing some type of shtar that creates a kinyan, which creates a liability. Without that, you can't be mechayev yourself. It's also important to note that the Gemara there says in Ayin Gimel on the base that the reason why you could be chayev in the case of the wine is only if it's absolutely certain that you would have made the profit. And it's not, in other words, not absolutely certain, this is Bori Hezekiah, it's within his hands to do it, it's beyond to do it, he is able to do it, it's in his control, and not up to the free will of other people. And in addition to that, that he doesn't exaggerate. A person says, I will pay for any money you could have made, that would work. But if he would say, I would pay 10 times as much as any money you could have made, that doesn't work. The reason why it needed to be beyond within his capabilities of doing it, and not to exaggerate, is because of the concept of asmachta. There's a separate thing which we can't go into, it's very complicated. In asmachta means that a person, even if he does a kinyan, and he signs on a shtar, and he does all sorts of things which would normally create liability, if the liability he's creating is exaggerated beyond the norm, then there's this concept of asmachta, and you can't be machayev yourself. So a person who says, if I don't do this, or if I do this, I will pay a huge fine, under most circumstances, will not be obliged to pay the fine, even if he did a kinyan or he signed on it. It has to be within reason, and within reason means the amount has to be a reasonable amount. It also has to mean that it's something that he's taking upon himself, that he could do, it's beyond the lekayim, he's able to do it. But something which is beyond his abilities to do anyway, and he says, if this eventuality happens, I'll pay. The Gemara takes on the kinyan, he didn't mean it, because there's nothing he could do about this eventuality, and therefore in such a case wouldn't have to pay. So that's a smachta. But the short of it is, if a person wants to be oblige himself, to be chayav to pay something, which he's not chayav to pay, as long as it's as a result of an eventuality which he is in control of, and as long as it's not an exaggeration, the amount that he's chayav himself, then he would indeed have to pay in such a circumstance. So now, in a contractual situation, if a solicitor or an accountant gives bad advice, and as a result of that, a person loses money, first of all, he can't come along and claim it was a groma, it was indirect damage. I didn't actually take your asset and break it or burn it, but rather I just caused you to lose damage. That's true in a normal circumstance, but in a contractual circumstance where you pay somebody, or possibly even in some cases where he does it for free, but he agrees to give you advice, professional advice, and as a result of that advice, you lose money, he would in fact be liable to pay. There's a machlok as a poskim if it's a din in Nezikin, a din in Tort, or it's a din in Chayvus Matin Orev. Again, but according to what we were saying, it can be explained very simply. There's a contractual obligation between the two parties, and you've agreed to be Machayv yourself to more than the regular liability of a machlok, and therefore you'll be Machayv even for indirect damages. Let's take it a stage further. You'll either be chayav for loss of profit, which is even less than indirect damage. You didn't actually damage him, but you just caused him to lose potential profit that he could have made. If you are professional and you're contracted to give professional advice and you are negligent in that advice and therefore cause him to make loss of profit, in many circumstances you'll be obliged to pay that as well, even though it's only mevachal kisei, because you're mechayev yourself, whatever is the norm. And the norm is to pay, certainly in England, to pay for any losses of potential profit in the case of breach of contract. So al pi halacha, if you were to come to Beis Din in such a circumstance, it would be actionable and you would be mechayev to pay. So that's the general background to the concept of a professional or professional liability in the case of negligence on behalf of the professional. He can't claim it's indirect damage, and he can't claim it's only loss of profit, which is even less than indirect damage, because in a contractual situation where he obliges himself, and certainly where he signs a contract, to give professional advice, it's clearly implicit or sometimes explicit that he will make good any losses, even only if it's only losses of profit, which are due to his negligence, and therefore, if he were negligent, it would be a loss of profit, he wouldn't be chayav to pay.
Does he have to pay the fees?
That's a very good question. That's a separate shayla, which we're going to now. There's a general shayla of a shomer socher, who you pay him to look after something, and it gets stolen afterwards, so the shomer socher has to pay for the thing that gets stolen. Does he get his fees for being a shomer socher? And if he doesn't, then he's not a shomer socher, and he can say, I'm not chayav to pay. So we won't go into that, it's a good question. Let's come back to our case. Our case has something unique, different from what the general cases, and that is that if you remember in our cases, at the time that the person purchased the property, there was a loss of potential profit. It was supposed to, he had the potential to build 10 flats, and he had intended and had hoped, and the idea was that he would have the potential to build 20 flats. So the property is now going to be worth less, or the potential profit is worth less. However, by the time he actually got around to getting planning permission, the zoning laws had changed, and in the end, he was actually able to get the possibility of building 20 flats. So what is the claim? So he comes on, he claims... Sorry?
What's the claim?
Yes.
What has he claimed?
Turn to the gentleman on your left and I'll explain to you. He says that the laws have changed. At the time that he purchased the property and gave his advice, there was a loss. Afterwards, the loss was made up by the fact that the laws changed and he was able to get what he would have got, what he was hoping to get.
That's not the solicitor's fault if the law changed.
Yeah. No, the law changed to his advantage. Changed to his advantage. At the time that he purchased the property, he wasn't able to get what he wanted, and then the law changed to his advantage. I'll give you another example. Another example. Someone who was contracted to write a contract for a commercial property for a lease of 10 years. And through the solicitor's negligence, he wrote a lease of 5 years. So now the property, were you to sell it today with a lease of 5 years with a commercial tenant, is worth less than if the commercial tenant has got a lease for 10 years. However, by the time he came to the Bayston, the 5 years were up, and the tenant renewed his lease anyway. So in effect, he got, overall, at the end, a lease for 10 years. But at the time that the professional gave his advice, he only got a lease of 5 years. At the time, the property was worth less than it could have been worth. Can he make a claim in such a circumstance? So this moves on to the concept of a nezek, of a damage, of a tort due to professional negligence, where the damage afterwards goes away. Or better still, it doesn't so much go away, but it's not actually crystallized in the first place. And I'll explain to you what I mean. There's a tesis in Gittin. The tesis talks about someone who hires an animal, and the same thing would be by somebody who didn't hire an animal but just damaged someone else's animal, caused damage, either directly or if he's renting it through his negligence, so he has to pay. But it's the type of damage that the animal actually gets better after a while. The animal breaks his leg, but after a couple of weeks, he'll be back to work again. So the first opinion in Tosafos holds that you don't have to pay for any damage. Why not? Because the animal eventually is worth back as much as it was worth in the first place. The damage is not permanent. Temporarily, the animal can't work. Animal can't work? That's a concept of sheves. Sheves means, we know that when a person damages another human being, there's nezek, tsar, ritbu, sheves, and boches. One of the things you have to pay is sheves is unemployment, the fact that until he gets better, for a certain period of time, he can't work. The Torah says, rak shivta yiten, you have to pay for that. Any losses that he made because he couldn't work. However, says the Torah, that only applies when you damage a person. When you damage an animal or an item or a chayfet or anything like that, you don't have to pay for sheves. It's mavatal kisa, it's loss of potential profit. You don't have to pay that because the damage is indirect, even though you damaged the animal directly. But the fact that he's not making money is only a loss of potential profit. You don't have to pay sosos. The second opinion in sosos is not like that. It's Rabbeinu Chananel or possibly Rabbeinu Tam, depending on the girsa, says no. When it comes to a person, we split the type of losses into two. There's nezek, how much the person was worth were you to sell him as a slave before the damage and how much afterwards. And then there's the fact that he's not going to be working for the period of time until he gets better. Those are two separate concepts. When it comes to an animal, the value of an animal is intrinsically the amount he can work, says Rabbeinu Chananel. And therefore, if he can't work even temporarily, that will lower the value of the animal. And that is called nezek, even though the animal gets better afterwards. So, how would we estimate the damage if the animal gets better afterwards? We estimate the damage at the time you did it. If you damaged the animal, broke the animal's leg, from 2 weeks he's out of action, but then he gets back to normal again. So you look at how much less would I have been able to sell the animal on the day the damage was done with the purchaser, bears in mind that for the next 2 weeks he won't be able to use the animal. That will cause the animal to have a certain amount of drop in price. That's how much you have to pay for the damage that you've done. So you see, there is a concept of someone who does damage to somebody, the damage repairs itself, and nonetheless, you do have to pay, according to Rabbeinu Chananel. There's a machlokas, as we said, in Tosafos. The Shulchan Aruch brings down the same machlokas in Tzimin Shin Zayin. There it brings, the Tor brings down, it doesn't refer to directly to Tosafos, but it brings machlokas with Shainim, and the Shulchan Aruch brings down both opinions. There's somewhat of a machlokus between the poskim as to which svara we hold. There are more things to paskin that both. And if we need, in principle, we hold like those who say a potter. If damaged, temporary damage to an item which repairs itself is only shevis, and there is no shevis of a baim or of an item or a chayfas or a non-human being, therefore he'd be potter. The shach is not so sure. He brings a marami rochberg says yachayev, so it would possibly be a sasegi b'dinah. But there are at least two opinions in the shulchanor. The marshal says in that case that you're actually chayev. The shach brings it down, but the marshal adds something very important, and that is that only if there's actual damage to the animal. If there's actual damage to the animal, even though it repairs itself, since it's out of action temporarily, you do have to pay for the fact that the animal was worth less on the day of the damage. However, if the animal wasn't actually damaged, but you just caused a loss of use of the animal, then you don't have to pay. What would the example be, says the Marshal, if you locked the animal in a room, put a padlock on it, and it took a week or two to break off the padlock. So the animal was out of action for 2 weeks, but there was no actual damage, physical damage on the animal. Were you to sell the animal on the first day that you locked it in the room, again, it would be worth less, because the purchaser will bear in mind, for the next 2 weeks you won't be able to get to the animal. But if there's no actual nezik, you don't have to pay. It's a way of estimating damage, but if it's just lost of profit, then you don't have to pay, says the marshal. There's a Beit Ephraim who seems not to have seen the marshal or the shach, and he takes on as a pashtus that no, even if you locked the animal in the room, according to those opinions of Hold Yom Chaim and Sachetim, you would have to pay. So let's come back to our case. Is our case comparable to these cases or not? At first glance, it would seem that they are. It is. There was a certain amount you caused damage to this property because it could have been worth more. Eventually, it actually recovered and was worth the same price it would have been in the first place, but at the time, there was a temporary damage. But I think there's a big difference between the cases. First of all, according to the Marshal, there's nothing to talk about. Marshal says, we only look at the opinion which says you're chayev if actual physical damage happened to the chayfets. If you locked the animal in the room, then we wouldn't look at the fact that there was a temporary loss in value due to the fact that it won't be able to be used for the next couple of weeks. So, according to the first opinion in Shulchan Aruch and the first opinion in Tosfos, you're anyway potter, because any damage which recovers itself, you don't have to pay for. According to the second opinion, according to the Marshal, it's only if there's actual physical damage to the chayfets, otherwise you'd be potter. Even according to the Beis Ephraim, who says that it doesn't have to be physical damage to the chayfets. If you lock the animal in the room, you also have to pay for the fact that there's now got temporary loss of value due to the fact it can't be worked. But there again, there was a real economic loss. The animal was not used for 2 weeks, so he's actually out of pocket. It's only a type of grommel, but since you locked it in the room, and were you to sell the animal at that stage, it would be worth less due to the fact that it's out of action for the next 2 weeks. The Beis Ephraim says that's sufficient to make you chayav. But in our case, there was actually no economic loss. The person purchased the property. Had he sold it at that stage, with planning permission for only 10 houses, then it would have been worth less than he intended to make, had he sold it for something which had permanent planning permission of 20 houses. That's true. Had he sold it then, it would have been worth less. But he didn't sell it then. He held on to it, and by the time he actually got around to doing it, it had recovered. In that case, there was no damage at all. It's not that he lost money, but it was indirect. Well, you can still make the person, the mazik chayev, because this type of nezik is actionable. The nezik did not actually crystallize at all. He never actually lost any money. He had an asset which, had he sold it, would have made less money than he had hoped. But he didn't sell it. He held on to it until eventually he was able to buy exactly what he wanted. Or in the case of the lease, he wanted a lease for 10 years. He got a lease for 5 years. So had he sold the property on day one, he would have been able to sell it for less than had he had a lease for 10 years. So he comes and he blames the solicitor for negligence. But if at the end of the 5 years the tenant anyway loses the lease, and then he comes to the Bezin, the Bezin will say to him, like Rabbi Padul says, where's your loss? You didn't actually make any loss. His claim is, yes, but at the time I had a loss. I had a loss because had I sold it then, I would have lost money. I would have made, or at least lost potential profit. The response to that is, you're right, had you sold it then, maybe you would have had a claim. But you didn't sell it then. You held on to it, it recovered its value. In the end, you ended up getting exactly what you would have got in the first place. The fact that temporarily you didn't doesn't make a difference. So in other words, just to sum up very briefly, in general, a person who causes indirect damage to somebody It's chayav loss of sedei shemayim, but it's not actionable. The Bezdin doesn't have to pay. If it causes loss of potential profit, there's even less. It's mevachel kisur shechaveru. He's not chayav. He's not actually chayav to pay. Whether the kiv loss of sedei shemayim is actually machlokes haposkim. In a contractual situation where the two parties have some type of agreement between them, then certainly if it's explicit or even if it's implicit that he accepts upon himself more liability, he will have to pay for nezek, which is indirect, and might even have to pay for loss of profits if that's agreed between the parties or that's implicit. In most situations, when you take a professional like a lawyer or an accountant or someone like or a surveyor, and certainly if you pay for their professional opinion, there is an implicit, if not explicit, agreement between the parties that if there is negligence on behalf of the professional, he will actually have to pay for losses, even if it's only groma, and possibly even have to pay for loss of potential profit. You have to be able to demonstrate that it was clear that that profit would have been made, otherwise the whole claim is doubtful. If the asset recovers itself, and in the end is actually worth the same as it would have been had the professional not been there, then it's much more difficult to come along with a claim. Because even if at the time that you sold it, you would have made less money, in the event that you don't sell it, and the asset recovers its value to the extent that it would have been like worth that anyway had the professional not been negligent, then in such a case, your claim in Bezdin is going to be very weak, because in effect, you didn't actually lose your money. You had a loss which was potential loss had you sold it, but since that loss never happened, the sale never happened, the loss was never crystallized, and there's actually no chiv to pay under such circumstances. There's a little bit more to talk about, but I think we've run out of time.
How do you define negligence?
Sorry?
How do you define
that? Very much depends on the circumstances. It's impossible to give a general rule when it comes to